Hello. Like many people, I have seen quite on set the dark side of kids' TV, and what a profound documentary that is, to say the least. And I wanted to share my thoughts on it. And when I thought about it, you know, it's like, okay, what do I have to add that hasn't already been talked about online? And when I approach it from that angle, I think I have something to add to the conversation, right? Things that perhaps aren't considered and I feel should be, right? And give us all pause about these various things. Now, before I fully get into all that, you know, I will say, unlike most people that have probably watched the documentary, I wasn't as much of a Nickelodeon kid. You know, I watched Drake and Josh. You know, my friends were hooked on The Amanda Show. But for me, I didn't have cable. And by the time I did, it was more about the Disney Channel, so like Lizzie McGuire and stuff like that. So, you know, what I knew and kind of grew up with Nickelodeon was more through, permeated through the culture rather than, you know, like I'd see an episode here and there, you know, by going over friends' houses, but I didn't have that true direct relationship with it in that way. So, you know, I just wanted to kind of be upfront about that. If I have gaps in my knowledge, you know, I don't claim to know everything, you know. Like I said, I'm just kind of, if anything, it's an exploration, okay? So, firstly, even though it shouldn't have to be said, but, you know, the state of the world that we live in, the stuff that was brought up, just horrific, right? Very, very horrific on so many different levels. And when I look at the response, in particular by Dan Schneider, there's the notion that, like, all of the stuff that happened, you know, the horrific stuff, let's say, you know, like, for example, with Brian Peck, he wasn't responsible for hiring him, or any jokes and, you know, situations, all those were approved by other people. You know, there was other people involved, like, you know, directors, costumers, other writers, and certainly, you know, networks have legal departments, and, you know, it has to get signed off. He says it has to get signed off on two different coasts, you know, New York and LA. And that's all well and true. Obviously, in that sense, for Dan Schneider, he's abdicating responsibility and saying, it's not my fault. I, you know, it got approved. Like, two things can be true at once. Like, yes, that's true. It all got signed off. But you have to take that responsibility on yourself to begin with, that, like, you know, you're the head of the snake. Like, you were in charge of X, Y, and Z shows, right? And this was the creative direction that you drove towards, you know? And yeah, people might have allowed it, but that doesn't necessarily negate it. But as far as the wider sort of scope of it, yeah, that is also interesting, because I think, and often with cases like this, it becomes a case of whack-a-mole, where, you know, now there's a large attention to these shows and Dan Schneider. And certainly we have to have, you know, accountability on various aspects. And, you know, for what he's guilty for and what he's not, that's not for me to necessarily adjudicate. But, you know, certainly in the past few years, whether it be through the Me Too movement or whatever else, we start to see the heinous systemic side of all of this, right? So he's not wrong. All of this stuff gets approved and whatnot, right? So it is a widespread thing, and the system itself has to change and be accountable in that way, to prevent these possibilities from ever being there, right? And, you know, that's the true thing. And I think certainly by exposing these granular stories, that can be part of it. But, you know, I just don't want one to overtake the other. You know, because it can be easy to get caught up on just a singular person as opposed to the greater cause. So, and, you know, I'm not the one to necessarily figure it out. That's, in fact, a lot of these child actors who have suffered tremendously are leading that charge. You know, so having like a psychologist on set at all times would be beneficial. It's also wild. This I didn't know. Drake Bell did an interview after the documentary had come out, his first interview, and he talked about how child actors don't get residuals. So normally what happens is, let's say you do a sitcom, right? Two and a Half Men, Friends, whatever. After you get syndicated, you know, like you want your shows to be successful so that way it gets syndicated. And once you're syndicated, now every time it's played, you get residuals. Apparently child actors don't get that. I don't know if that's been changed. I'm not affiliated with SAG in that way, so I don't know these certain things. But that's wild that's ever been the case. It's wild if it hasn't been changed. Just wanted to kind of point that out. And as far as the systemic aspect of all of it, what it got me thinking to, it would be very interesting to see a study and explore this further, you know, both in the US, but also in other countries. Like, is this type of an environment pervasive and a problem in other productions, both in the US and outside the US? Because certainly I grew up in, you know, I spent summers in Slovakia and I spent a lot of time in Europe. So I'd seen a lot of international kids' TV shows, ones that I tremendously enjoy. And much like all of us, it would be, you know, that have watched, let's say, Quiet, you know, in this case, Quiet on Set, and it excuse me, to say that it ruined our childhood is such a weird statement, because A, it's more gut-wrenching than that, but also it pales in comparison to what these kids actually went through. So to do a, it's just a strange term. But anyway, the point being that if any of these foreign TV shows that I enjoyed, that you know, the kids shows, or even shows or movies that have kids in them predominantly, if they had these types of environments, these types of experiences, yeah, that would not be a great feeling for me to know and think about. Like, it would make me, yeah, it would make me sad, hurt, and all these different things. But I'm also willing to bet it's not as pervasive in that way. I think Hollywood, again, when we talk about the systemic aspect of it, it's kind of like a byproduct of late stage capitalism and, you know, this idea that Wall Street, you know, one of my old mentors, Kevin Undergaro, talked about Wall Street has money on the line. Well, Hollywood has fame and money on the line. And so, in particular with like the aspect of Hollywood, beyond just like even kids, a lot of people will get taken advantage of because, you know, the people that do come out here, we're dreamers, right? We want to be in the arts. We want to create something for audiences that resonates with them, that moves them, and all that good stuff that you want, whether it's a, you know, comedic movie or just a psychological thriller. Like, that same sort of passion is still there, that same sort of drive. And you saw that evidenced in these kids. Like, yeah, they wanted to be on TV, but they wanted to be on TV because they wanted to share something with the world. There was a purity there. And when I look at just the European film industry in comparison to Hollywood, you know, I love foreign cinema because it is still very artful. Like, yes, it wants to do well commercially, but But it does that by having good product, right? And just the fact that there's, you know, film grants out there that just see it like, hey, go make your, you know, if you have an interesting idea that's just worthwhile, like that's its merit. There's film grants out there, much, you know, much more than in the US. We don't look at art as just a necessity of life in essence versus other countries. We look at it as commerce, and it's very much become bastardized by late stage capitalism, right? And this is kind of how you get there, is anything at all cost, right? Where it's like, okay, we got to make the show successful, blah, blah, blah. So then the bar lowers itself of just how we approach it, right? How we treat people, how we treat people. Until it creates a toxic work environment. And I think that's another aspect of this, you know, because now as clips and stuff like that resurface, you know, hindsight sort of 2020 in that way of like, okay, well, how could this, you know, stand and so forth? Certainly, I'm not excusing it, but it's kind of like the frog in the water, right? You don't throw, I hate this analogy, but it obviously works, where, you know, if you throw a frog in boiling water, it's going to jump out, right? Because it's going to be hurt and it's going to be like, what the hell? But if you put the frog in cold water and then bring the water to a boil, because it's gradual, it's not going to realize the pain that it's in. And, you know, all these things, certainly the shows themselves and the questionable stuff that was on the shows, it's not like, I mean, again, pardon me, you know, we might disagree with a little bit maybe, but again, I'm kind of more coming from just an observation versus like a full knowing, because I didn't watch all the episodes and stuff like that in order and so forth. But still, it's not like all the heinous stuff is just there like back to back to back to back, as it is of a hit list that you can watch like on TikTok or, you know, through other social media apps, right? So it was much more kind of scattered throughout. And, you know, so that way when something does arise of like being questionable, you know, you could see the justification. Oh, it's like, oh, it's just this, right? Again, I'm not excusing it. I'm just trying to put myself mentally in the bystanders of people, you know, whether the parents and so forth. And yeah, you just kind of get into that way. I mean, some people can say, not that I want to make this political, but like, how do we find ourselves in this situation? It doesn't matter when you're on the left, you know, the one thing that the left and the right can agree on is that like, what the hell kind of state of country are we in? You know, and it's like, okay, well, we find ourselves over time. It doesn't just happen overnight, which goes back to the idea of the widespread systemic aspect of it, right? And, you know, it starts with like all the heinous parts of Hollywood, that exist and have existed, you know, trickle down into, you know, kids' TV and bastardize it. And that's the worst of it, because they're innocent, right? They need protection and so forth. But still, again, like I just want to reiterate that, like, it would be very interesting to see an actual study of how pervasive this is across kids' TV, you know, in other countries. I really would be very interested to see that study. And maybe it exists. I don't know. I haven't dug that deep. But that would be sort of interesting. The sort of other interesting aspect of it that when I thought about one of the big things coming out of this is Drake Bell's, you know, confession, his story. When I say confession, it's not like he's confessing to have done anything wrong. He's confessing to what happened to him, right? And as part of that, they revealed these letters, character letters written by people we know, a lot of us know, right? Very famous people that stood up for Brian Peck and everything he'd done. And that's another thing. Yeah, it's just, how do you sort of handle that? How do you kind of process that? You know, I mean, for me, Boy Meets World was a big show. And even before this documentary, I don't listen to the podcast by Will Ryder and I'm blanking on the woman's name who played Topanga, but they do a podcast and kind of, you know, talking about the good and bad of Boy Meets World, as I understand it. I mean, usually I see like the bad parts of Boy Meets World written up and so forth. But the point being that I grew up with that show. You know, that's a show that I'd seen every episode of. And, you know, hearing their stories, you know, as kids and stuff like that, and knowing what they went through. And now there's this different context where, like, oh, wait, they had a hand to play in something that was quite heinous. So that's a lot. Yeah, I don't know how to necessarily process that. And I think, not that the documentary needed to sort of go in this way, but it is interesting to me. I'm very much with fascinated. Like, I have this phrase, you can't believe in karma and evil at the same time. And most people kind of that I speak with, my inner circle, they reject that notion. They believe some people are truly evil, or they don't quite understand what that means. And for me, there's a sort of, you know, cyclical aspect to a lot of things. And in this context, the way I sort of look at it is, where does one begin? Where does one end and one begin? Meaning, let's just take a look at Drake, right? So he as a kid experienced something horrific. And, you know, I don't know the full story. I don't know the full context of everything. But, you know, certainly he's been accused of, not to the same level, but, you know, talking with a minor. And it led or could have led to felony charges, right? So, you know, in a different context, let's say we cut to 20 years from now and we look at these types of stories. So then now Drake, in many ways, could be considered the heinous person, right? The Brian Peck of all of this, right? Just go with me, right? In this way. And so now he's the perpetrator and someone else is the victim. Now, if you know Drake's story, you know, it's one of the sickening things about us as humans. In many ways, we do onto others what's been done to us. That's certainly not an excuse. I'm not saying that in the least bit. If anything, actually, what I am saying, that's why I'm such a big advocate of therapy, because the true goal of therapy is to look inward, heal yourself, and to not bring your suffering onto others, right? Now, that's, you know, that's obviously a very horrific manifestation of it, right? You know, as a child, you suffer something, and then, God forbid, you do it to somebody else. But even the internal struggles of that a lot of these child actors deal with, of alcoholism, drug abuse, things of that nature, you know, that's another aspect of this, right? Even if they're not, like, obviously drunk driving is bad and puts many people at risk, right? But even if, let's say, they weren't affecting others, you know, you don't want that darkness for them, right? So that aspect of healing oneself, that's why, you know, therapy is important. So, you know, that's an aspect that I do think about, you know, and again, I'm not, please do not take this as I am excusing any of it. But, you know, and I've talked with friends like Dan Schneider, you know, Dan Schneider's history was highlighted in the piece. And I was like, yeah, but it was like a 5-minute segment versus all the things, all the heinous things that he did. And conversely, you know, there was a lot of time spent on Drake and what he went through. And then, yes, there was the manifestations of the negativity that were byproduct of that. But that was kind of like a wrap up, you know, 5-minute segment, give or take, right? And so, I don't know, I'm just interested in this fuller picture of where does one begin, you know, like what creates these situations so we can start to get out of these situations. Again, I'm not justifying, please don't, you know, I know I'm walking on very dangerous territory, so I'm not justifying any of this. But for the psychological exploration of, you know, whether it be someone like a Dan Schneider, a Brian Peck, like all these people, what got him to that point? Like, you know, that's a sick mind, right? And so what gets you there, you know? And how do we prevent it? That's what I'm after, right? Because, yeah, it's, you don't want that. You don't want that. And then the other thing too, you know, I don't think this is a requirement of everybody, but I look at, for me, you know, I work in Hollywood. I've not worked with kids. But all the same, you know, I highlighted that Hollywood is, you know, it's rough, you know. And often I try to use these moments to really reflect upon, okay, am I culpable in some sort of way? And how am I, you know, contributing to the system? Or helping change it, you know, like in many ways, Hollywood will try to will you know push you, knowing that you have these aspirations and these dreams. It's perverse, but they'll take advantage of that in any way that they can, whatever way that they can take advantage of you. Oftentimes, like they will. And that's a tough line to walk, especially on an indie level, because a lot of people that I work with, you know, we're all doing it for passion. None of us necessarily have the money to pay each other. I certainly, when I've worked on my projects thus far, I can't pay everyone the rate that they deserve to be paid. And so... Because of that, I try very much to make it as pleasant of an experience as possible. I try to really listen, you know, and just do what I can. Am I perfect at it? No. But I do try to, you know, again, it's something that I very greatly grapple with. And I don't know. I don't know if I'm the only one. I know I'm not the only one, but as far as like, you know, who you'd probably want to have this self introspection, you know, probably not enough people are having it. You know, certainly when I, like Dan Schneider put out a 20-minute interview, this was through, I believe, The Hollywood Reporter. It was him and Boogie, who also was on iCarly. It was just weird because, like, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that was brought up on in the documentary that, I mean, you can essentially have an 8-hour podcast interview and barely scratch the surface of everything that the documentary brought up. And they felt that within this 20 minutes that they covered all the topics sufficiently enough and set the record straight. And yeah, I mean, you know, the tough part is, you know, it's, you would want, like, if you're going to tell your side of the story, have it be told through the documentary, right? Participate in the documentary and confront those things through a much more arduous process. And I get it. The documentaries in general, just like all things, you know, they can have their biases and slants and so forth. But in that sense, you know, as far as Dan's rebuttal, you know, many people are calling it propaganda because it's a very articulated version of what he would like to say, right? And as I said, it doesn't really get at anything, really. When you look at it, it's 20 minutes and there's a lot of questions, you know, questions that are asked, but none of them go in depth. It's just like, hey, yeah, they're just so surface level. And so as far as that, I don't know, like, I guess the comparison would be that I had nothing to partake in this. Like, I didn't, you know, I'm in this instance, I'm just an observer. I watched it, and yet it's making me reflect and try to be a better person. And for him, not that he's cavalier or anything like that, but it doesn't seem to sting as much. And not that it has to necessarily. You know, I have to believe people are capable of change, because if they aren't, that means I'm not capable of change. But there was one instant, like, so if you're going to essentially be kind of cool and calm and collective about it, that's fine. I don't think necessarily there's, you know, you can approach it from that way. Again, I think had it been an 8-hour interview, that would have been, you know, it would have lent itself, like, it would have come off more believable in that way. But there was that moment in that 20-minute interview where, like, for, I don't know, 10 seconds or so, he starts to cry over Drake and that story. And then he essentially kind of, like, the tears go away. And I'm not saying, like, it's tough because it felt very edited down, right? And so I'm not saying that the tears weren't necessarily real, because by all accounts, you know, even in the documentary, Drake talks about how Dan was there for him. But just the edit itself, it made it seem very disingenuous, okay? Let's just put it that way. So it leaves the question, was it genuine? Was that moment at least a moment of genuineness or not? Like, was it like a forced cry or not? Because it feels like the way it's edited, it didn't seem honest. And when you sort of look at it too, I think the biggest backlash about that is that it was very calculated, and he does it in this way. And, you know, people have called him out that, you know, he says, like, I often think about calling these people and apologizing. And I think it's valid to say, well, why don't you, right? You know, something that I try to adhere to, and it's just a good mantra in life, right? Like, when you think about somebody, give them a call. And that I mean in the purest of ways, like, the best sense, you know, if there's, like, you know, someone I played soccer with in college that I haven't talked to in a while, but, like, something reminded me of them. Like, why not text them? Like, hey, you know, hope all is well, just thought of you, blah, blah, right? You know, life's too short in that way. So that's the purest, most good-willed way. But in this case, yeah, if you're thinking about them and you feel like you've wronged them, why not reach out? You know, you thought about it, but why? I get, you know, there's a trepidation, and it's very scary to have to apologize. I understand that. But doing that, you know, that's the real work. And, you know, oftentimes, you know, when stories like this, like, a lot of it gets aired out in the public. You know, I've seen people sort of talk about Josh Peck's silence and all of this, or Miranda Cosgrove. To the best of my knowledge, Amanda Bynes hasn't said anything and doesn't look like she will say anything. You know, who knows, maybe in due time and stuff like that. But, or like a Victoria Justice and so forth. And, you know, I think about, like, we as an audience also have to give them some sort of space and grace. Like, they're not obligated to air this out, you know? They, as was shown with Drake and Josh, you know, Josh had reached out to Drake behind the scenes and so forth. So, you know, on the audience side of it, I don't understand where this almost like we deserve it, you know, that we're just, it's supposed to be given to us, that, you know, anything happens that we're just supposed to know and get all the inside scoop. And if someone chooses not to say something, then they're heinous and stuff like that. Because I do think the true work is the stuff behind the scenes that you do, you know. And so these sorts of apologies and fixing of the past, if you will, you know, I don't think that just happens by, you know, one person. And, you know, there's an aspect to it, right? Like, we're all curious and sure, like a reunion type of episode of like, get everybody on a reunion show and let's air this out, blah, blah, blah. But I don't think that's a very salacious medium to truly create healing, really. So, yeah, I don't know. Those are my thoughts on Quiet on Set. You know, and if nothing else, I do appreciate the documentary for creating a lot of conversation. You know, as is the hope of any victim that came forward in the past and now present, you know, the idea is that by sharing this, it exposes something and hopefully creates meaningful change and needed change. And like with all things, I think the reality is, you know, it's a marathon, unfortunately, not a sprint. You know, we can look at like the civil rights movement, you know, we're still essentially fighting that battle today. But hopefully we can at least take a big step forward and into the right direction of this all. So we shall see. But yeah, if anything, I think it's pervasive within Hollywood, just in general of, you know, and this idea of people just getting taken advantage of, you know. And the truly sad part is, you know, Walt Disney, he did a lot of great things, but sure, he was a very complicated man to say the least. But at the end of the day, he was a dreamer, and you know, he had, there was this passion to him of like, well, why would anyone want to leave work to go home when we're creating movies? Like, that's the best thing ever, right? That was sort of his principle, you know. And I'm not saying it's the best thing, but now when you've got people taking over at the tops of these studios and networks and so forth, where they're literally just Wall Street people that just look at the bottom line and that's it, and there's no sort of vision towards the artistic, I don't know, in many ways that's worse to me. So and it's not surprising the results you get out of that. So yeah, maybe not the most hopeful, but I think like the documentary, an introspective look and perhaps a call to arms. So I want to share just, you know, a slightly different opinion. And yeah, and by the way, when I say that, it doesn't negate the other opinions. I just didn't want to have to echo and reiterate something, especially when it wasn't mine to, you know, I'm not the voice of authority, let's say, on the other stuff sort of being shared. So I wanted to talk about stuff that I felt I was better equipped to share and look at. So, yeah, lots to think about there. Please comment down below. Let me know your thoughts and opinions. Would love to have a constructive conversation, you know, if you're willing to have it. So thank you for taking time to hear my thoughts. I'm ready to read your thoughts in the comment section. I hope to see you next time.